Blog Talk Radio.
I find myself in a lion's den as a beggar with an outstretched hand. I find myself in a western land asking for bread from this honest man. I do not fear the lion's den. You'll be brought up to your father's land, and my cries along with all an ancient man do return to its promised land, going home again out of his life.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're live because we're married to stay alive in Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert we're the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 724, putting our cards on the table, part one. Baruch Hashem, blessed is our eternal creator, shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience, all 7.7 billion plus human souls gleaming and streaming into the creation. This is Anti-Eugenics Radio. With Creator's help, our next broadcast is taking place right now, June 23rd, 2019, starting at 11:30. It's 11:31 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island equals the USA equals AKA Unified Soul Actualization. Program content will focus on being in discussion with Torah for the World Administrator Michael Clark. His journey embracing Torah, what are his intentions in the short term in addition to the long term, spreading values to empower the human thought, speech, and action experiences. Our call number, which you can call in the second half hour, will be 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may our merciful Creator bless you and your loved ones in a peaceful and pleasant manner. We're listening to Young Levi Robin from the Lion's Den. And now to come out of the Lion's Den with us right now into the program, our co-host, Michael Clark. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. Shalom, shalom all out there, and I hope you're all having a blessed, great day today.
Well, I am, and the blessing has just been added because I just brought you onto the program live from the Peach State, Georgia. My first interview with someone from the Peach State.
It's not many of us here, but hey, I'm here.
Well, the only thing I ever associated with the Peach State, Georgia, is Herschel Walker, a Hall of Fame football player, and Tyrus Raymond Cobb. But I think now I might have to put you on even keel because you are involved in an endeavor that I don't know if Tyrus Raymond Cobb thought about it, Ty Cobb, the great baseball player, or Herschel Walker, the Hall of Fame football player. You're on the playing field of promoting Torah values, Michael. And
we talked
about it last week, and I want to bring this to the beginning of the discussion. I'll let you carry the ball verbally after I share an idea from Rabbi Eli Monk from a wonderful book called Compassion for Humanity in the Jewish Tradition. The absolute belief in one creator, and I wish to emphasize in parentheses, when we talk about one creator, we don't talk about a numerical oneness. We're talking about an all-inclusive oneness. And this is the foundation of Israel's spiritual value system, which emphasizes the unity of life on earth through the power of the Spirit. The only solution for establishing true harmony between the nation of Israel and all nations is to raise all mankind to the idea, which is the Israelite ideal of bringing the whole world under this rulership, dominion of the one who spoke and the world came into being. This cannot be done by force and will not happen by itself through historical necessity, whether realizing it or not. Since the dawn of time, humanity has been committed to this unification. There have been periods of intense paganism and idol worship amongst the nations and also amongst the nation of Israel, to our great pain. And leading on to the progressive development of religious systems, which unfortunately placed intermediaries between the human soul and Creator. And it is gradually triumphing over regimes that divide society into master and slave. Instinctively, though, on the subconscious level, we're talking about the union of all human beings and all peoples in the era of justice and peace, an era crowned by the kingdom of the Creator. And therefore, Rabbi Monk asserts, the paths of Israel and all nations are gradually coming together. The day will surely come when these paths will join. This must happen because truth, which is the same for all nations, must triumph. Not just the truth of Israel, but for the truth of the existence of all nations. The suspicion felt by other nations toward Israel will be replaced by respect and recognition of Israel as the keeper of the flame of eternal truth over thousands of years. Then hearts will open wide, and Israel will share its spiritual heritage with all the nations and will offer them the universal framework for building the kingdom of Creator. In the final analysis, it is the reconciliation between Israel and all the blessed nations of the earth that will bring about the restoration of universal harmony. Out of the brotherhood of all creatures will spring up the common worship of one Creator, the Father of all mankind, humankind, and as the ancient prophecy of Zechariah testifies, it will be the fulfillment of, quote, the Lord will be king over the earth. On that day, the Lord will be one, and his name will be one. These are portions I extracted out from Rabbi Ilya Monk's Ascent to Harmony.
That's awesome.
Michael, how does that jive into your mindset, your view of the world?
Oh, it's a necessity that I feel in this time that we're living in. It's one of the most important topics that we should be discussing. And, you know, you covered a lot there. But I will even take the fact of how the Jew and the non-Jew at this time, more than ever in history, we must work together as a partnership, not as a different class or different operation, but we need to work hand in hand in bringing goodness back into this world and bringing godliness back into this world and to fight this tide of just hatred and stuff that we see in division that's in this world. It's time for us to come together and take upon the Torah in our ways that we do and join together and fight against this flow of negativity that we see going across the world right now. So that's how I see that. And also, too, it's really my goal in what you – reflecting on what you just said – is to see the children of Noah, the righteous from the nations who have left their previous faith and turned their backs on idolatry – to take upon these seven principles, these seven laws that I like, you know, that me and a brother of mine, David Ben Shul, have coined the Genesis walk. No, not starting a new religion, but just basically putting a topic on something that's been there for generations. But to bring this awareness to all non-Jews that you have a pivotal role to play in this redemption that we keep talking about, and to see Mashiach come, that it's time for the Ben Noach, the children of Noah, to wake up and to realize the potential, and that the Jews actually need us. They need us to be righteous. They need us to be pointing to the nations and lifting them up. So that's what it means to me, is it means that our partnership needs to be awakening, and we need to stop looking at each other as categories, but as oneness, as universalist, as you just said, and working hand in hand to bring redemption upon this world. That's what it means to me.
Beautiful, Michael. And I want to point out something we touched on briefly before today's program, is that one of the things that is very vital is the normalization within human culture, and I don't even like using the word anymore. I think it's kind of an outdated word, the word Gentile or non-Jew.
Right.
And on the other hand, too, you have B'nai Noah who are faithful and are knowledgeable of the fact that there were seven useful commandments that were given twice to Moses, the mighty Levite prophet. One in a place in Mara, which was in the desert after the Israelites left Egypt, and then a second time was retransmitted at Mount Sinai. That some B'nai Noah consider themselves at a level.
Right.
When they say, I accept the commandments. But I like to take the approach to get rid of if I could expunge it from the human English dictionary, I would expunge Gentile and I would expunge non-Jew. Because, first of all, I think it's insulting. Like, for instance, we're living basically in a Christian-dominated society here in America. No, you know, that's the way it is. That's divine providence. I don't like to be. I wouldn't want to be defined as a non-Christian. I want to be identified as a Jew. And therefore, I don't like to look at a quote-unquote Gentile or quote-unquote non-Jew. I like to look at them as a Ben Noah, a son, or a Bas Noah, a son or daughter of Noah, because that is not a level of servitude to the Creator. That is an actual lineage. And I think also that's part of the equation, Michael, that, and I was told this by a very learned Ben Noah by the name of Ron Williams, that a lot of Bene Noah or Bas Noah, they feel a certain lack of esteem or a lack of self-pride, think, oh, the Jews have this heritage from the Torah and the prophets and Abraham, Isaac, but we all come from the same family of Noah and his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, who were blessed by the Creator going into the ark and were blessed by the Creator to go out of the ark and be fruitful and multiply. So
correct.
What is your take on this matter, changing how we identify ourselves as human beings, whether the children of Israel or the children of Noah, not the non-Christians or Jews or the non-Jews, the Gentiles, and take
okay.
on what the Torah will say is our true lineage.
Right. Well, as you would know, and I have tried, I have in the past, I have seek conversion into Judaism because my father is Jewish on his side, but yet halakhically, as you know, it's not accepted. And as
right.
you know, when you go into conversion to Judaism, you are actually taken upon that whole history. You're taken upon that whole lineage. You're learning the traditions. You're learning what it is like to be a Jew and to live as a Jew through the centuries. Well, unfortunately, Don, the Ben Noah, the children of Noah, we don't have that tradition. In other words, it'd be a waking up to where, yeah, I realize these seven laws, but we don't have a lineage no more. Now, we know they had a lineage in Genesis. We know that Adam passed it on to Seth. Seth passed it on to Enoch. Enoch passed it on to, you know, here down the road. You see where I'm going with that. So they had a tradition
right.
early that they passed on in an identity. And as a Ben Noah, as a Noahide, and I don't like terms, and I don't like these terms either, because I even find within these terms there's a limitation we place upon ourselves. But we see, as when I pass on and my wife passes on, what do my children have? What are they holding on to? And then we got to be careful not to form or create a new religion, which is commanded in Torah. So we
right.
have to walk a narrow line to bring in traditions. We have to bring in a lineage that we can pass on to our children. As many know, the history of the Noahide, 20, 30 years ago, we saw a surge within non-Jews who at this time, what we call the Messianic Hebrew Roots Movement, had not even really kicked in yet. It was around, but it hadn't started. But it was just people
mm-hmm.
waking up from their religious systems of church and the mosque, and they're like, man, I know there's more to this than this right here. And they stepped out of their system, and they stepped into the Noahide faith, which was very young at that time. It was like a revival from 2,000 years ago. Like, and there wasn't a
right.
lot of information out at that time for these people. And a lot of these people have gone on, and they've either become atheists, or they become non-religious, or they just don't do anything no more. It's time at this generation that we're living now, and this, what I believe, this coming of non-Jews before the redemption, is that we are actually trying to create a lineage for ourselves. You know, and you mentioned
mm-hmm.
Pasach Serbo a while ago, and you know, his wife in Israel, and that's one thing he is trying to do, is just find a group of people that can come together. Yeah, we have differences and different understandings, but can come together in a unity to start this. And I know, you know, even David Ben Shul, my partner that I work with, and Terry Hayes, you know, you talk about Georgia, he's down in Tennessee, and you see these people that are coming together trying to work together. No, we don't agree with everything, but we are trying to commit to have a starting point to where we can stop and look at these seven principles, these seven laws, rest, and then press on forward. And then, you know, what the future holds, we don't know, but we've got to have a starting place somewhere. And that's the main problem I see within the Noahide movement, is we do not have a lineage and we do not have a history. And that's something that we have to start without creating a new religion.
True. And what is very important is to generate, Michael, I think, a common perception. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, late in the Shabbat day, I was learning with two other individuals, and I had a prayer book. Well, there was a prayer book between the three of us, and I asked each one, what does that prayer book mean to you? So the first person, a young man, a very learned person, he actually has a master's degree in education, but he's in the beginning stages. He's basically straddling the line between beginner and novice, but he has the intellectual capacity to become a great scholar of Torah. I wish upon him these blessings. He said, well, when I look at this prayer book, which is in Hebrew, I realize the lackings of my understanding of the Hebrew, so I can't readily access this book. Okay, that was his perception. The second person was saying, well, we're using this book to pray to Creator. So, okay, also valid. So I looked at the prayer book and said, well, yeah, this similar to the same lines of the second person who gave his perception of the prayer book. This prayer book is the means by which the Almighty had commanded the wisdoms to the prophets of Israel that we should have a structured liturgy in order to connect in a more definable manner according to the wisdom of the prophets as transmitted to them by the Almighty. But one thing we all agreed upon, it was a prayer book. So I think when we can get all people on the allegorical table of discussion to understand this is a prayer book or this is a commandment, then it's okay to have differences. As long as we realize that we're talking about means by which to connect to the Creator in a way that, I'll give you an example. A friend of mine is well versed in the martial arts, and he said there's a type of preparatory exercise for a beginner / novice where they basically do certain types of movements, circular movements, for 1 hour. And it has to be an hour. So you might say, well, why not 26 minutes? Why not 37 minutes? Why not 49 minutes? Why 58? Why not 58 minutes? So the point of that exercise in that realm of martial art is that once you get to that 60 minutes, you can move on to the next move. So I think that's something that a lot of people embracing the Torah, whether it be Jew or Ben or Bas Noah, is they want to get everything at once. And as we talked before the program, the Torah lifestyle is the actualization of the existential moment. In this moment, anything can happen, and it will happen. Just because we're not aware of everything that's happening doesn't nullify the significance of the moment just because we're not fully aware.
Right.
The little baby was not aware when the mother was, you know, giving the child those first drops of milk or food that the child graduated. But from there, the child learned to say Gugu Gaga, Mami Tati,
right,
Abba Ima, and they grew.
Right.
So I think this is part of the process. We should encourage people to grow at their own level. I'm not going to eat next year's portion of food now. I'm just going to have enough to fill my plate, which hopefully will fill my belly.
Right.
Your take on these matters?
My take on this matter is you're absolutely 1,000% correct. So many times we are trained as non-Jews that when we approach the Torah, we look at the Jew and say, it ain't fair. They got 613 commandments, and we've got only 7 commandments. And then, as you said before this, they probably would think they only have 10 that they should follow because of the 10 commandments. But the fact of the matter is one thing that I have learned with David Ben Shul is that when a person comes to Torah, the worst thing that you possibly can do is jump in and try to take upon this lifestyle within, like you said, the first year of your understanding. Because they're, like, for instance, I work on Saturday. My job requires me to work on Saturday. So the halakha of keeping the Sabbath, to me, would be totally out in the first spot. But that doesn't stop me from celebrating, having a family meal and stuff like that to celebrate in the Sabbath and not keep it like you would do it. So I don't, you know, my problem early in my walk, Don, I was eager. You can ask David. I was eager. I was discouraged because I wouldn't be accepted because I couldn't do these things. And it came to a point where I had to set my ego aside. And you talked about perspectives a while ago. And one thing I have learned from study of the Zohar is you have to learn from that top-down perspective and the bottom-up perspective when you're studying things. And now I'm at peace within myself as I learn and take upon the Torah that I'm studying these 7 attributes first and including them within my life. I am learning how to deal with these things of the topic of thou shalt not steal. On the simple part, the Peshat level, people say, oh, that's easy. I just don't steal from my neighbor. No, it's so much deeper than that. You can get into categories there. If I cheat my worker, if I don't pay him correctly, I have broken that. Or here's a tough one for a lot of people. If I take upon the identity of a Jew, wear a kippah and tzitzit, and I'm not saying in time you can't, but I'm saying if you take upon that identity and you're out in the world eating in non-kosher restaurants and stuff like that, you are bringing bad light upon the Jewish people. So I am stealing an identity that people don't even tie within that commandment also. So we're seeing within these 7 principles, there's a lot of things that we have to take in before before we even start talking about Holocaust issues. It may take a lifetime to learn to plug these. And I'm going to tell you, this don't also just go with the non-Jew. This goes with the Jew also, because the Jew also has to follow these seven principles too. So
it could take
a lifetime to figure out these seven principles. But there's not, you know, as I said the other day in a video, the Rambam gave permission. If a non-Jew feels they want to take up on 613, it's fine. Just don't say you have to, first of all, and don't stop doing it once you start. But the thing is, that's not the thing. So many people want to jump in and start doing all this stuff. We got to have that connection with the Creator first. We got to find that intimacy. We got to find that connection before we walk forward. And so many people in today's McDonald's, Burger King, fast food service world, they want it all at one time. Well, the Creator doesn't work on that time schedule. And it may take it.
That's right.
One thing we've learned at the group that I'm with is it's the journey, not the destination. And I have taken so many different turns in this journey through my life. And I'm not ashamed of my past. I have learned from my past. And the thing is we got to be careful not to jump into Jewish Holocaust before we understand the seven principles we all must bear first, just to be good individuals, good humans, and to have that spiritual connection. Without that, it's not going to last. You're just not going to last.
Beautiful, Michael. I just want to point out as well, from a teaching from the second Chabad Rebbe, Rebbe Dovber Shniori, who also was a judge in Jewish law. This is one of the things that I'm just, for anyone out there listening, the potency of the Chabad Hasidus is that the first three Rebbes of Chabad were all rabbinical judges. So everything that they collated and congealed into the Chabad Hasidic viewpoint of how to learn Torah from the interdimensional perspective, which also includes, because the Rebbe, Lubavitcher Rebbe of our generation, encouraged the B'nai Noah to learn about the oneness of Creator as opposed to serving idols. So the Rebbe Dovber Shniori taught that in exile right now, because of the fact we don't have a temple and we don't have a jubilee year, which some people want to assert can take place, which I disagree with, according to the teachings I've learned, right now with the state of Israel, that the Jewish people can only keep 87 commandments. On the other hand, as you pointed out, Michael, there are many dimensions to do not steal. For instance, I don't know if many people are aware of this, but Rashi, the primary elucidator of the oral Torah tradition, speaks of the fact that do not steal, which is written in the Ten Commandments. And as Michael, we spoke before the program, many people think the Jews only have Ten Commandments and the Noahides only have Seven Commandments. We actually have 613. And the do not steal commandment of the Ten Commandments is talking about do not kidnap another human being.
Right.
And in the book of Leviticus, there it talks about the simple stealing, which branches out to the qualities of, I mean, the not knight's qualities of stealing. Michael, let me ask you this. What was the teaching that ignited your cognitive processing, your emotional capacities, and your soulful longing to kick the Creator? What do you remember that seminal teaching? And then afterward, you can ask me the same question. I think we'll be interested to see how both of us were turned on to a Torah awareness and eventually a lifestyle.
Okay, well, at the time I was in I was actually in the church, and I was actually an associate pastor within the church, and I had heard a friend of mine was teaching on Hebrew roots, and I'd always had that feeling in my soul that there was always something more. No matter what I got into, different denominations, I always felt that there was something more. I wasn't being fed. So when I heard that this guy was teaching on the Hebrew roots of the faith, I started getting hungry and desire, and I started going to that study. And to make it really short, I fell, the first time I heard the words, I just fell in love with the Torah at the time. And then in 2005, me and my father went to Israel. It was our trip together. And
wow.
I felt that connection. Don, it's weird to say, but I felt a connection with the land like my soul had been there before, that I had, you know, and I know a lot of people say that, but I just really felt the connection. And I told my daddy, I said, I really don't want to leave. I don't want to leave the land. So I've come back, and since then, I just, you know, I did the same journey a lot of people did, went through the mess. I became a, quote, messianic rabbi, which I laugh at now. And then I became a rabbi and leading people into Torah, and then I met my wife of 20 years, found somebody else, so she left me. So I found the Creator gave me a beautiful soul that I'm married to now, and I moved up here to Atlanta, and her parents actually go to Chabad in town here in Atlanta, where they can when their health lets them. And I got plugged into the Torah, And then at that time, I met David Ben Shtul from UTOM.org, and we just connected. And really him sharing with me of the progress and the story of Abraham, of how Abraham had to leave his home and leave his religion. A lot of people don't understand that Abraham's father was a priest, and Abraham had that ability. They were serving these idols, and how the Creator had to call him out of his land and to really just put him on the path to where, you know, he became eventually the father of the Jewish people. It really connected with me, and I had to make start life choices about my former faith and realize that, hey, this is not the path, that Torah is the path. And then I started trying to live Judaism, the 613, and just frustration and anger, and just got a little bitter. You know, the rabbis don't accept me. They don't want me. And the Creator just dealt with me on a one-on-one issue with the help of David, and just kind of like, wait a minute, I created you. You're a southern boy from the state of Alabama living in Georgia. I have a purpose and I have a reason for you to be where you are. And when he spoke to me in that capacity, I realized I let my ego go. I let all the anger and the bitterness and the hatred and stuff go. And I said, Creator, whatever you want to put, whatever you want me to do, I'm here. And at that time, he started introducing me to these principles. And I started seeing that my role as a non-Jew in my life was just as important as your role as a Jew to spread, and then you actually helping us, you know, sharing the light. It's going to come to a point that we're going to have to take this mantle on ourselves, and we're going to have to start teaching this to the nations, because as Pasok says all the time, they would rather hear it from me than they would from you. Not that they disparage you, but they like, you know, we're like kindred spirits. We want to hear it from our own family first before we hear it from somebody else. So that's where it came live to me about, you know, 3 years ago. I started learning this and then studying the Abrahamic walk and learning how he came out of his idolatry. And then just about 6 months ago, through the study of the Zohar and through the study of the seven commandments, it just became a reality. And just within the past month, it's become a passion within me. It's just like the Creator just said, this word has to get out. I just really believe he's ready for redemption. He's ready for this thing to be done, and we need to wake up and do our job. That's as simple as it is. We got to wake up.
Amen. I really like your approach, Michael. And I like, before I have another question, I'd just like to share briefly how I, in fact, started to embrace a Torah lifestyle. I was fortunate enough that when I was 8 days old, I actually had a proper circumcision. Unfortunately, to our great pain, that many Jews born in America or in the former Soviet Union do not get it. More and more Jews in the Americas are getting, but I was fortunate. There was a Rabbi Lilienthal, may he rest in peace. He used to go around to hospitals in Connecticut and look for other, and I'll say in the Yiddish, where there was a Jewish boychikel, a little Jewish boy born. So I was born in 1962, and 8 days later, I was circumcised. Okay, fast forward. My initial introduction into Judaic lifestyle was through the Reform movement, through my parents. My mother's parents came from, my mother's father came from Russia, White Russia, Belarus, as we say. My mother's mother came, she was born in America, but her family also came from Belarus, White Russia. And my grandfather, my father's father, came from Warsaw. And he started out life as a faithful Jew, but his father and several of his siblings, I'm sorry, his father was in Warsaw at the time my grandfather became bar mitzvah. And so in about 1915, 1916, my grandfather had his bar mitzvah, and the next day had to go to work for 16 hours a day at the age of 13 to support his mother and four or five other siblings. So that was basically the cutting off of the Judaic observance within my family. And the expectations of Jews growing up in post-World War I America, and then the Depression, then through World War II, was that you become American. And there was a great distancing from a Torah lifestyle. However, I felt a tremendous, I don't know how to say, a tremendous mediocrity as part of the cultural norm in America. And what I saw was that actually individuals, like say from like the civil rights movement and other noble human beings throughout history, they always seem to have a fire with them. And I related to it as an athlete. I played a little baseball and football and basketball. I was going up to high school. It wasn't that great, but I was a competitive person. And I always related to the competitive drive that other human beings would not just talk about, would exhibit. So as far as my initial interaction would say, like the Ten Commandments, the proverbial Ten Commandments, that was Charlton Heston as Moses. He did a decent job. In fact, Charlton Heston once said, of all the characters he played in all the movies he was in, only Moses was a real person.
Right.
Okay, so let's segue several years later. Within that short time, because I think it was 1968 I saw it, my father. Remember the old days with the movie? I don't know if you remember. I mean, you're a couple years younger than me. There used to be intermissions between long movies. I still remember that.
Yes,
intermissions.
Yes, I remember that.
First half. Yeah. So anyway,
yes.
What happened was that I accepted it, and I went through high school. And, you know, like kids get into rock and roll, and all of a sudden I got exposed to certain types of music, and I got exposed to reggae music, and I was very fascinated by how Rastafarians were talking about King David and King Solomon and prophecies, and I was like, wow, and wearing Stars of David on their chest, and I happened to become friends with a band who I'm still friends with today, some of the members, Exodus Supreme, based in Paterson, New Jersey, and I started to go to a class through Divine Providence. I used to be a great bike rider from Paramus, New Jersey to Muncie, New York, and I saw a picture of the Chafetz Chaim, who maybe you've heard of, Rabbi Israel Radin, from the city of Radin in Poland, and he had such a distinguished face. It wasn't the average face of, say, like a Jewish comedian or a Jewish actor from the 60s or 70s when I was growing up. And I went to a class, and I got a book called The Art Scroll Book of Genesis, and it happened to be the Torah portion, where lo and behold, Jacob is running for his life from his brother Esau, and he's going to the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever, Shem being the son of Noah, who is the priestly branch of the Noahide family experience. And so Ever, I think, is a great-great or great-great-great-grandson. And it said that Yaakov, when hiding from Esau, went to learn Torah and the oral Torah tradition from them for 14 years. I said, and Hashem, God, had mercy on me. And a flash of mind, wait a minute, my family never talked about an oral Torah tradition. I just want to mention something. When I was 10 years old, my cousin was almost 11. My cousin had turned bar mitzvah. I remember going up for the first time. He read the Torah on his bar mitzvah, the day that he becomes a man in Jewish cultural tradition. And I remember being petrified to look at those letters of Hebrew. And I had no idea what I was looking at. I might have been looking at Swahili or Chinese or Arabic. But again, once that flash in my mind was that he went to learn the oral Torah tradition from previous generations. I said, I think I found something my family never told me about, something they might not have been aware of, but they were hiding it. I mean, I heard Yiddish in the household, but I was never retaught it. Eventually, thank God, I moved to Israel for a while, and I developed a proficiency, and I can speak, and I can think in Hebrew, and I can write, speak. So, but Michael, it was a process of, I believed in a God, but then the aspect of knowledge and faith started to, and I like two puzzles that I never knew could be put together. I'd like to ask you about that. How do you put those two puzzles together? The universal puzzle of Torah, godly knowledge, and the universal value of faith in the Creator. How do you put those two puzzle pieces together?
I like to think of it as lifting up sparks, lifting up souls, lifting up the world. Because once you start learning the seven principles, once you start learning the true faith, Emuna, you start learning these things. You start engaging upon these principles. That's one thing we've been hitting real hard with lately, is engaging in the Torah. It's actually to not just study and to just study all the time, but you've got to give out. And the same thing with the study of the seven principles, the seven laws of Noah. It's one thing just to know them and read them and just accept them as they are, but to really engage in the study of them, and then where you can actually go out into our neighborhoods, into our workplace, you know, and share. You know, one thing a lot of Noahites look down upon is they don't, you know, the Shabbos and everything. Well, I find it a blessing that while you're resting, our priestly nation is resting, that I'm out in the world sharing these principles with the world. So I don't look at it as a negativity. So that's how I tie these two things together, is that my faith in these principles are to elevate the people around me as they elevate myself, but also giving back out. If we don't give out, if we don't put these principles out there and share them through our lifestyle and through our teachings and through our everyday conversation, you know, it's not like the evangelists do with that faith as far as, you know, you either turn or burn. No, we don't do that. We're trying to elevate humanity to a higher understanding, to a higher existence, to where we can bring the messianic era upon this world. So that's how I tie that together, is not only studying and learning, but also giving out at the same time. That's, to me, what true faith is all about.
And actually, this is Rambam would agree with you, or you're agreeing with Rambam. I'd just like to pull that teaching out here. Let me just see. I have the book. Yeah, here we go. That there is actually a positive commandment, which shouldn't surprise anyone, that you shall love the Creator, which if anyone wants to learn more about it, go to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6, verse 5. And Rambam, in his seminal work, The Book of Commandments, which I would heartily and with full enthusiasm encourage any human being to learn what are the 613, and within there you'll find the 7 Noahide commandments. So when we talk about you shall love the Lord your God, which I'm sure many people who are of the faith-based communities in the world have heard of this verse, that this commandment, as you just alluded to, Michael, includes calling upon all people, not just Jews, all people to serve Creator and have faith in Creator. Because if you love someone, you're going to praise and extol him.
Right.
You'll call upon others to love him. So if you truly love Creator, you're going to make Creator beloved to mankind. And who is the prototype example of someone who called out to the human family experience, as I like to call it? Abraham, our father.
Yes, yes.
So the more you love Creator will be authenticated, not by trying to prove to anyone, but really to give evidence to yourself that your love of Creator is growing by causing others to love Creator. And Michael, I'd like to mention something which I heard briefly. I think it was either in your presentation or in Torah for the Nations, this whole idea of the Genesis walk. How
right.
important is it for the B'nai Noah to really do some in-depth study into the book of Genesis?
It's imperative. You can actually spend your whole lifestyle within the book of Genesis and never leave and never fully understand what our role and what our purpose is to us. I mean, you know, people want to point to, you know, the other books and say, well, this is for the Jews and stuff. I've got enough with Genesis. And that's one thing that I have learned is the Genesis walk is, like I said, it's not a new religion. It's just a phrase that we use. That once I get into this and understand in chapter 2 of how the soul is connected to mankind, and then to see the true story of the tree of life, and to understand that you know, that we are actually, we have a purpose here. We're here to fix a mess is what we're here for. And that's one thing within the book of Genesis. We can actually stay in there. I can honestly say you can stay in there your whole life and never understand fully yet of what you're learning, because you talked about Abraham. You know, our tradition says that Abraham used to pitch a tent, open the four sides, and if somebody walked by,
right,
he yanked them in and taught them about the one true God. We should have the same compassion within our hearts, even our neighbors walk by, not like passing out tracts and stuff like that, but sharing our life experiences. And it goes back to what we said earlier about engaging in the Torah. Engaging means more than just study. It means more than giving our experiences out to others so that they can find the Creator as we have also. So it's imperative. The book of Genesis is so full of understanding that most people look as a history or they look as a past experience. But no, it is for us today, especially as the children of Noah, to get in, to study for ourselves. It's good to have teachers. It's good to have rabbis to help you. But ultimately, it's up to you to get in there and study yourself and
yes.
pull out these things that are going to help you.
Right. Like if it's a nutritious food, I look at it this way, Michael. Person eats something which is being promoted, or one has learned from one's parents or family members or teachers, nutritional professor, that such and such a food will give you extra energy.
Right.
You're never going to know how much extra energy you have until you get out and do some exercise or live
right.
a more active lifestyle. Then
right.
after you engage in those activities, whether it be running or jumping or swimming or playing baseball or playing handball or just taking a swift walk, okay, it's very nice to eat healthy food, But it's right. there to energize you. So Torah is here to energize the human
right.
being who wants to. One more thing I want to. I think something that's very exciting, which I think is also should become part of the cultural norm of children of Noah awareness, is that every human being mentioned in the book of Genesis, even though we see already with the identification of the 12 tribes of Israel, is of the Jewish law, halachic perspective, a children of Noah or a daughter of Noah.
Exactly.
For example, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, although we call Abraham the first Jew because in the Talmudic tractate of Megillah, which is basically the oral Torah tradition, how do we embrace the holiday of Purim?
Right.
Abraham, according to the strict letter of Jewish law, was a Ben Noah. In fact, he certainly
right.
was a Ben Noah because he was
yes.
a great, 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 I think he was 9 or 10 generations after Noah. And I
right.
need to share right now, Michael, with everyone, that Abraham had 10 trials. And you're talking about a prophet. You're talking about someone who eventually became a very wealthy man. Hashem, God loves those he tests. I'd like to just review. There's two different perspectives. There's Rashi and the Rambam's perspective. I'm just going to go according to Rashi's perspective. That the first test Abraham had was that he had to hide underground for 13 years for King Nimrod, who wanted to kill him. Now, there's another
right.
viewpoint that says that his mother hid him for 30 years. Okay. Again, these and these are the words of the living God. Number two, the second test that Abraham underwent was that Nimrod flung Abraham into a burning furnace, and of course he survived it. Again, but people have to learn the oral Torah traditions of what actually transpired there. I'm just throwing this out there, Michael, for people to know that they can do research on such topics. Number
yes.
three, Abraham was commanded to leave his family and homeland. Number four, almost as soon as he arrived in Canaan, he was forced to leave to escape a famine. Test number five, Sarah was kidnapped by Pharaoh's office officials. Number six, the kings captured Lot, and Abraham was forced to go to war and rescue him. Test number seven, God told Abraham that his offspring would suffer under four monarchies, the four levels of exile, which is, again, people can do more research on that. Number eight, at an advanced age, he was commanded to circumcise himself and his son, which, by the way, he was 99 years old. Number nine, he was commanded to drive away Ishmael and Hagar, which I've seen in other commentaries. That was a very, very, very painful experience for Abraham. And number 10, of course, the binding of Isaac on the altar, the famous Akedah. Like, the reason why I'm sharing this with individuals is that, you know, I think spirituality is given a bad name by people who say, well, you become spiritual, everything becomes like Disney World. No.
No.
Not that God, it's like anything. You know, if I want to develop more muscle mass on my biceps, I've not only have to keep up with my, say, 10 push-ups a day. Is it going to come a day? Well, I'll have to. That's to maintain my muscle mass. There comes
right.
a certain point where I'm going to have to move on to the 11th, 12th, 13th, and 30th push-up. And why should I be surprised if the lactic acid starts to kick in and I feel that burning, surging through my up muscles? But after the trial and the muscle mass increases, again, we're speaking allegorically, it was worth it, that lactic acid being released to give me that sort of like painful feeling, because that's
right.
the lactic acid is basically a message from the body saying, take it easy. So
right.
when we're getting
no
tested, there's like a spiritual lactic acid which can cause some discomfort. Like all of a sudden our families take a step back like, hey, he or she is moving into a cult because they're learning Torah. But that's okay. Because
right.
even with the indifference, and sometimes I've gotten rebuked by my own family members, 33 years later, they, oh, Don, he's the faithful one in the family. And I want to bring up one more point before I ask you to comment, Michael. Is
yeah.
in Torah language, the language of the Bible, there is no such word for religion. So you brought up a very salient point before. B'nai Noah, the seven Noahic commandments, is not a religion. Neither are the 613
no.
commandments. There is religion is something which came out of, which spawned out of it, because unfortunately we of Israel and the children of Noah, we didn't get the job done. And as Rambam writes in the Mishnah Torah, our thoughts are not God's thoughts. So he allowed, for instance, say Christianity and Islam to be spawned and develop as they have. And to this day, several billion Christians and more than, I think, close to 2 billion Muslims, because That is also to prepare the world for the universal redemption. Your take on
right.
these matters.
Well, I'm very anti-religion. I mean, I'm not against the people in the religion, but I totally agree with you that the Creator did not create religion. We have created religion. And like you said, it has its purpose. It has boundaries to keep the world at some control level, to keep people from just going crazy. It keeps, you know, if you look at Christianity and Islam, they are looking for a Mashiach or Messiah to come back or to come to make everything right. So they are used to the principle of a Mashiach. It's just kind of misled. But yeah, I am just totally against the religious concept because I believe the Creator speaks outside of these boxes. Yes, if we get, you know, you're talking about spirituality, people throwing off on that. But the fact is, spirituality brings me in constraint. It keeps me on the path. It keeps me in line. Because, like you said, if I mess up, have an impure thought, have impurity, or bad, or do something wrong, these commandments come back to me. If I mistreat somebody, these seven laws, these seven principles are reminded of me by the Creator as soon as I do it wrong, or sometimes even before I take a step. He'll put something in my mind to, I better not do that, or I'll violate that situation. So I'm with you on that. I don't do religion, but I do relationship with the Creator is what I do. And I think that's the whole concept. The people of Noah and the people of Moses are going to have to come together, and that's one thing we can definitely work together on is no boxes.
Okay. Now I thank you, Michael, for those points. I hope I was not misunderstood, or I didn't communicate it properly. I'm not against the whole idea of a life of spirituality. I consider myself to be living a life of spirituality, but I look at spirituality, again, this is my own perspective, as the study and the internalization of the design of the creation as opposed to the outward manifested formation of the world. Like I was talking in our class yesterday, we're talking about, look at the Earth. You've got the Antarctic, you've got the South Pole. In between, you have seven continents, four oceans, and the myriad of sea life and the myriad of plant life. I mean, there are places of Africa. There are things going on there that even, quote-unquote, modern civilization has not even been able to explore yet. We don't even know what's hanging out in those in those regions of Africa. The Baal Shem Tov taught us and teaches us, Michael, and for those listening, just as scientists, will never really know every mineral and precious substance that is embedded in the earth, so too in the human being. There are realms of consciousness. I mean, the whole proverbial, you know, we only use 4 or 7% of our brain. Okay, if that's how they want to map it out. But there's a plasticity to human consciousness. There's a plasticity to the human body, which is proved in clinical trials. They've shown, say, for instance, Down syndrome kids, who a good friend of mine, Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldsack, who's a neuropsychologist who runs a wonderful organization, Heart to Heart, in Jerusalem, calls them Up syndrome children. It was at either Michigan State or the University of Michigan. It was some college in Michigan where they did clinical studies with Up syndrome children where it was deemed as a cultural norm of their human development. As young children, they lack the balance to ride a bicycle. So someone came up with an idea, we'll train them first on stationary bikes, and those Up syndrome children who were trained to ride on stationary bikes could eventually ride on bikes that are free moving with training wheels, and eventually ride a bike without training wheels.
Right.
So too, in the spiritual experience of a human being, we all have to get onto our, you know, stationary bike position. Allegorically speaking.
Yes, I agree. The point. I agree.
We have to, you know, and then we get onto our spiritual level of the bike with the training wheels. And then eventually we feel empowered, the blessings of God, to ride the bike spiritually because we understand the design now of what the bike is and how the mechanics of our bodily motion with our legs and our arms and our posture. So that's how I look at spirituality, Michael. It's a recognition of design over form. We don't deny the importance of the physical features of a human body or the physical features of anything, but to be aware of design. And that's how I look at spirituality. And then I say immerse yourself in the design of the creation or the spirituality of the creation and of Creator, of course.
That's one of the best definitions I've ever heard. Seriously, that was good.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, you mentioned a website before that you learned with, you hooked up with David Ben-Shul.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You said, can you say that? I'd like to promote that website because maybe other individuals like to. I gather it's like a Torah partner type of scenario.
It is a Torah partner. It's www.utom.org, and it's all, you know, we've kind of geared it more now for the seven principles for people to introduce them into that and to you know, really come in and, like you said, first learn to sit on the bike and then start pedaling, and that's the way we approach thing is you've got to have that connection with the Creator first, just like Abraham, just like Enoch, just like Ed, they all had to have the connection first before they could go forward from that point on. And we see that, you know, your whole story that you just did, we see that within the patriarchs of how the Creator started, and he just finally built the bike when he got to Israel. That's when he built it. But we're still trying to learn to ride the bike now. But, it's Utah, but I also recommend Immunotrack, which is Terry Hayes's, which has got some great stuff for the Principle 7. And then that's a blog, actually. And then, of course, Pasok is a Torah for the Nations is also a good place to go also. But there's others out there, but these are the ones that I know personally that are trying really on the same track to try to get these principles out there to the nations and to see let's lift these people up. Let's lift the nations up and get them prepared for the redemption.
Amen. And also, I want to share a teaching. One of the ways of preparing is to have an actual taste of the redemption, Michael, which Rambam is very clear in the Messianic era, the we call it Yomot or Yomos or Mashiach, that the awareness of godliness of the Creator and our person creation will be so manifest there will be no more hatred, jealousy, or unnecessary competition. Now, in any moment, if a person can just simply, without a great knowledge of Torah, written or oral tradition, think about either two ways. Number one, I wish to expunge from myself any hatred or any jealousy or a desire to compete with any other person. And on the other hand, on the positive note, I want to feel love for someone that previously I might have had a difference of opinion with, or even more than that.
Yes.
And I don't want to. I want to feel admiration for someone who I formerly felt jealous of, and someone who I might have gotten to a some level of competition. I want to acquiesce the next time I meet with him or her, at some level that would be socially appropriate. Now this is we're not even going into. So this is like as we mentioned before, you know. Taking a teaching and seeing how it applies. Baba Trevi once taught Michael that when you look at a person, think of their good attributes. The very fact that you're thinking, not even talking to the person, the fact that your human soul, which is directly configured to your divine image, and one of the things that I've been instructed indirectly through the teachings of the Lubavitcher Rebbe and encouraged by my rabbis, is to remind every human being they have a divine image. We are configured automatically, without our choosing, to be connected to the divine attributes of Creator, Jew or Ben Noah. Your take on
right.
that matters.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, this goes with the seven principles, again, that we have to think about when, if I despise you or I am angry with you or lash out at you or do so, I'm not actually doing it to you. I'm actually doing it to that divine spark within that person. And when you start looking at things that way, you start changing your perspective. You know, you start looking at things differently that I don't need to lash out with them because I'm not actually lashing out at them. The Creator ultimately is inside that soul because he breathed life into them. And at that point, we have right. to be very careful of how we do that.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm sorry for that. If you heard my speaker is kind of burping.
Yeah, I hear that.
I don't know if you... Yeah, I don't know what's going on there because we're almost finished with today's presentation. I really don't know why that's doing that. I don't. Let's see if we can. It looks like we got rid of that spirit. That burping.
Yes.
Oi, it's back. It's back. It's back. Michael, we have about 3 minutes left.
Right.
If you were to share a kernel of your wisdom right now, for someone who just turned on the program, whether they be in one of the eight countries that we're getting listeners from in Africa, the majority of the American continent and Canada and Mexico and the majority of the countries in South America and Russia, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Korea, Japan, New Zealand, Australia. What is the message as one human being broadcasting out to, as the first Chabad Rebbe described the earth, as a mustard seed compared to the rest of the universe? So therefore, we understand that there's a lot of activity on this mustard seed. What is that kernel of wisdom you'd like to share as we prepare to segue out of today's blessed efforts?
First thing is the Creator loves you. He desires your fellowship. He's crazy. He's totally crazy about you. But in saying that, this is a journey. We're not looking at a destination. Where we're at today may be totally different tomorrow spiritually. But we've got to hold on and trust His Torah, first of all, His instructions. And we got to listen for Him. And we got to look for Him through things like within nature and understand individuals. He's speaking to us continually. And the thing is we must be observant to what He's saying to us and to stay on path. To listen and to go where He sends us, just like Abraham. If He sends you out within, one thing, we just did two recent shows on rejection and loneliness. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. a lot of times for children of Noah, this is a common trait within us, is that we're rejected by those around us. And it's a very lonely journey. And there's a lot yes. of rejection also, because people just don't really understand what we're doing. So we have to realize that this is not going to be all the time a good, smooth journey where everything's going to work out perfectly for you. But if you hang on to the Creator, if you actually get and start studying these seven principles, these seven laws, and you actually start connecting with the Creator, that the journey, the bumps, the bruises that we go through are scars that take us to different places that we shared before we went on the air about how you look back to where you are now to where you started learning the Torah. The same thing. You're going to look back on this journey and you're going to say, man, I cannot believe I've gotten this far. But the whole purpose of this journey is to elevate the souls around us, to elevate people, to love people, to bring kindness and goodness and love to this world. And that would be my advice, is press on, find the connection, and do your job upon this earth. That's what I would say.
Amen. I'd like to thank Torah for the World Administrator Michael Clark for offering up his own personal offering of one of his most precious commodities, his blessed time this past hour. And this is Dan Zusio Goodman, your local international cyberspace Torah activist, reminding everyone, may the words of our mouth emanate out from the inner dimensions of our heartful meditations towards the entire human family experience. May this manifest in a way of Ahava Chad, one love, Gurel Chad, one destiny, Kolano for all of us, Badarchi Noam, Darchi Shalom, in a pleasant, peaceful way. And I remind everyone, but I remind myself before anyone else, I've got to be good, you've got to be good, we've all got to be good, because Ateba Tov, Lehetiv, it's the nature of good to do good, and the Creator is the source of our goodness, waits ever so patiently within the eternal attributes of the 13 attributes of mercy. And with that being said, we're going to segue out of today's program with some wonderful music. I know in Michael's website, Torah for the World, there's wonderful music being offered up, because music is also the key to redemption. It is 1/60th of prophecy, and 1/60th prophecy is sleep. Of course, the full prophecy we'll hopefully see speed in our days, and the prophetic spirit, as taught in the book of Joel, chapter 3, verse 1. I'm not going to say the scripture, bless those. I'll let you do your research. Prophetic spirit is coming to the human film experience. But in the meantime, this is a song to my brother from Isaac Baton, a good friend of mine. He's the president of the Beit Mazal Shul, the House of Fortune in Crown Heights. And again, everyone, have a wonderful week. And hopefully next month we're going to be reconnecting with Michael Clark, Torah for the World Administrator. Take care, everyone.
Lanetzach I wanna sing this song to my brother.